we were curious about was kind of what you've observed and what you think the impact will be going forward, especially on things like jobs and entrepreneurs, and what industries will really need AI and what industries really can't be touched by AI. Because I read through the report, and I was really interested in kind of the description of the rise of AI as a sort of apocalypse.
The rise of AI, what was the last word?
There's a portion in the report that this, it's actually in Terry Slattern's letter to the editor or editor's note that describes it as kind of an apocalypse.
I mean, people talk, that's the kind of, that was me being slightly sort of jokey to sum up the sort of horror stories which people like to tell about AI. I think although there are some dangers inherent in misapplication, if you like, of the technology, I think that the idea that it's going to bring about the collapse of society as we know it is probably overstated.
Right. Why do you think people feel that way?
I think there's always fear of the new, fear of the unknown, and fear of something which people feel they don't understand and therefore can't control. So I don't think that's unusual. People feared electricity when it first appeared in the Devon, in the West Country of England. People used to call it electricery. So they believed it had, new technology which people don't understand is often provokes fear because people fear the unknown. I think, there are going to be some surprises, and by definition, we can't predict them because there'll be surprises that AI might bring about, but there'll also be nice surprises as well. And I think when it comes to employment, so there's a lot of coverage of jobs that might go because of AI, and some certainly will. But equally, there will be jobs created because of AI, and we don't even know what they are yet. We can start to hazard some guesses, but they're only that. And there was a nice quote, I can't remember if I used it in the article, there was a guy saying that if he left university in the mid-1980s, and if people in the mid-1980s, they'd asked him, "So what are you going to do now you've grown up?" And he said, "I'm going to be a website developer." Mm-hmm. Nobody would have understood what he was talking about. Now there are, millions of website developers around the world. So that's an example of technology unleashing a whole new sort of sector of employment, as it were. And there will probably be the same, likely to be the same with AI. Mm-hmm. So there will be almost certainly new types of jobs created, which are about people interpreting what AI can tell them.
Right.
And I think there'll be sort of AI interpreters, if you like, AI managers, AI interpreters, people who are working with AI to tease out some of what it can tell us, if you like. The other potential upside, or another potential upside of it, is of course it does free people from doing really boring work. There was an interesting survey, and again I can't remember if I quoted this in the article or not. I think it was a survey just done in the UK, but it might, no doubt, it, similar surveys have been done elsewhere, which asked people basically if they were really engaged with their work, really excited by their work, if they hated it, or if they just felt indifferent to it and would rather not be doing it. And it came out as roughly speaking, about 4 out of 5 people were either actively disliked their job or they were rather indifferent to it. Only about one in five people were really engaged with their work and really enjoyed it. So when people talk about AI killing off jobs, well, yes, it might do to some extent. But on the other hand, if it can free people from doing jobs they don't like or really hate, then there's potential in that. Obviously, it all depends how it's handled, how the whole issues of sort of retraining, of finding other more meaningful work for people, how that is handled by society. But the potential for people to get away from doing jobs they loathe has to be a good thing.
Right. Is that like kind of do you imagine that as being kind of the middle ground or the balance between like not having AI and having people in less than ideal work situations? You know, I read about kind of the retail manufacturing industries and how they've come under fire for first underpaying, overworking workers, and sometimes child labor issues came into play, but then AI gets introduced and now they don't have any workers that are any.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good example, and I included in the article the one about Nike.
Yes.
And how Nike got all that flack for using child labor, and now it's starting to get flack for not having any labor at all, or potentially not having any labor at all. So yeah, exactly. There is that middle ground. I mean, there will be upsets. There will be difficulties, and groups of people will suffer as a result, because like any disruption, there will be problems. And one of the challenges of society is how you deal with those problems. I mean, some of the problems will be with affecting people who, on the whole, we don't tend to worry about too much, like lawyers or accountants. I mean, a lot of legal jobs are subject to being disrupted quite heavily by AI. A lot of accountancy jobs subject to being disrupted quite heavily by AI. Other classes of jobs, like if you're a textile worker in Cambodia and earning quite a good living, in local terms, of being a textile worker in Cambodia, that could have a really destabilizing effect on the economies of countries like that. Because once you've got sewbots, as they can call it, i.e. robots who can sew textiles, sew t-shirts and so on, once you've got them who can do it a lot quicker and a lot cheaper than a human, then a couple of things happen. One is that people get put out of work. Two is that you might as well build the factory that's going to make this stuff in Florida or in Chicago or ever, i.e. close to where the things are going to be bought, because there's no longer any economy in having it all the way across the world and having to ship the stuff over to the home markets. So that could be quite a disruptive element going on. Now, it might well be that those people all get other work as well. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there will be, you know, bad things will happen to good people, as it were, as a result of this, as well as a lot of good things happening to good people.
Right. And so have you observed, whether it's lawmakers or corporations trying to mitigate the loss of jobs? Because it's not just the law.
Everybody's at the bottom of the ladder on this. Everybody's just starting.
Yeah.
People are not really, because it's not hitting home in terms of employment very much yet. Everybody's just trying to get their heads around it, basically.
Right.
I mean, there are all kinds of initiatives out there. I mean, when I was researching the article, you know, every time I sort of clicked on another link, I found another bloody initiative.
Mm.
And they all tend to say the same sort of thing, quite frankly. You know, they all tend to sort of, you know, say, well, you know, there are many benefits of it, but we must, you know, set up sort of systems which ensure that the vulnerable are protected, that there is social good coming out of this, that et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's all blindingly obvious stuff, you know,
right.
Kind of AI and motherhood and apple pie. I think I said in that article, you know, it felt like they all basically started with a sort of, you know, a Hippocratic oath for AI,
yeah.
you know, thing that doctors, you know, swear, saying, first do no harm,
yeah.
You know. So there's all that. I mean, on the you know, very positive side, the capacity of artificial intelligence to interpret data at amazing speed, to sort of crunch through vast quantities of data and make sense of it, has huge potential in terms of tackling disease, for example. Mm-hmm. It's got huge potential from a sustainability point of view, in the sense of reducing energy demand, and also being able to use energy much more efficiently and make the maximum economic use of things like small-scale renewable energy by being able to move small amounts of energy to and fro just as and when needed, by being able to monetize energy generated from domestic scale renewables like solar panels. So it's got a lot of potential to maximize the efficiency with which we use natural resources, if you like. Mm-hmm. And so reducing our environmental footprints and you know, making society more sustainable in that way. So that's you know, those sort of areas, tackling illness, boosting sustainability, are big pluses of AI.
Right. So you say everyone is at the bottom of the ladder in this situation.
Pretty much. When it comes to the big disruptions, we're at the bottom of the learning curve. I mean, you can see it in... I mean, AI is here. You know, Facebook works because of AI. You know, the algorithms is basically AI. If you know, nobody's got a precise definition, but it's a kind of combination of sophisticated software, algorithms, cloud computing, data harvesting, just both the sheer amount of data that there is around nowadays, which has grown exponentially in the last decade, and the ability of software to interpret it. And you put all that together and you basically got AI. People sometimes say it's computers being able to do things which previously only the human brain could do. But you put all that together and it's there already. Basically, it's the, you know, reason that Facebook is free, if you like, is because of AI, the power of the algorithm to harvest and interpret data and sell data.
Right.
So, and it's some of the downsides are sort of there in terms of some of the worries people have about social media. But in terms of it actually sort of directly affecting people's jobs and so on, it's just at the bottom of the learning curve, really.
Yeah.
At least that's my interpretation of it. I mean, other people might say it's further along, but my feeling is that most people are just beginning to get to grips with this.
Right. In your opinion, could it make the world a bit more economically friendly, because part of the reason why certain things cost money is because of the manpower behind them. So if we automate certain things, could it make things more accessible for people who need them, like legal services, like medicine?
All that potentially it could. And I think one of the exciting things, if you look at the potential of blockchain to secure people's rights to things. So it's much, if that works properly, then it's much harder for people to be defrauded. It's much harder for somebody who's got, say, title to land to have that taken away from them.
Right.
Because, you know, it's not a case of having some sort of legal notice which somebody can come in and steal or ignore, or a government can trash. This is something which exists beyond and outside of any particular legal authority. So you could imagine, for example, that you know, peasant farmers in Africa might find it easier to prove title to their land as a result of AI. If you see you know, the whole blockchain network as one of the products of AI. Similarly, as you say, it can make things cheaper, it can make things more widely available. So in that sense, it can be more democratic. It's not quite the right word, but it can potentially be fairer. But it's like a lot of these things, you know, it is a tool. We've invented it. You know, it didn't come from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
We've invented it, and we can do what we like with it. And inevitably, we will do some good things and some bad things, just as with the internet, you know. It can make a lot of things work more efficiently, for good or for ill. So the main thing is to remember that we have control over it, if we wish to.
I'm reading this. I read this article about people who are trying to regulate AI, and there are a bunch of different fragments. Is regulating AI and making sure it's used as responsibly as possible something that we're going to have to decide on globally, or can countries individually or businesses individually decide on it, and it's probably going to be okay, in your opinion?
It's going to be both, isn't it? I mean, we're very bad at global regulation. It doesn't, you know, it happens up to a point. Global regulation tends to happen when there are not too many interested parties with a lot to lose out involved. Mm. So, you know, and even then it doesn't always work. So, I mean, the classic example that people use of successful global regulation is the Montreal Protocol, which outlawed substances which destroy the ozone layer.
Right.
And that kind of worked, partly because there wasn't enough vested, partly because it was obviously serious enough, and there wasn't enough vested interests to delay it for too long.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's still not working totally. There are still people producing ozone-depleting substances. When you look at trying to tackle climate change, you know, the biggest single existential threat to humanity, you know, we've got a global process in place, but it's you know, it's not easy. So I think it'll be different things at different times. There will be sort of UN brokered initiatives on AI. I think there probably are some already, but you know, that could come into a global convention. You could well end up with a global convention against autonomous weapons, say.
Mm.
You know, like there are sort of, you know, nuclear non-proliferation treaties. You could imagine there being an autonomous weapon non-proliferation treaty. It doesn't mean it will always be obeyed. And then you can have initiatives. There'll be certain corporate initiatives that will take shape. So I think there will be a range of different attempts to tame the tiger, as it were.
Right.
Or ride the tiger, probably is a better metaphor. And it'll range from, you know, voluntary initiatives from businesses through to things, you know, individual governments passing laws, things like the European Union passing laws, through to international conventions. And they will have varying degrees of effect and so on. It's not going to be wildly different from how we deal with sticky problems at the moment. I don't think. I think sometimes the danger with anything like this is people sort of think this, you know, to use that dreadful Apple phrase, this changes everything, you know.
Right, yeah.
The things very rarely change everything. They change some things in quite a big way, but we don't necessarily have to completely reinvent the wheel. You have to remember this is just software, or software and hardware combined, you know. This is something which we have invented, and we can choose how to use it.
Right. So what about two questions? What about the people supplying the intelligence for AI? Is that another job?
Supplying.
You mentioned interpreting the kind of software and technology and the machine learning. What about the people who supply that? Because these machines are still not humans, so they can't totally think. So will someone need to supply the intelligence for AI?
Well, people need to ask the questions, yes. So it's a case of, you know, people need to decide what you're feeding into the system, or what you want the system to interpret, as it were. You know, so that, as I say, the great ability of AI is the speed of being able to process data.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's already, as I say, it's already there. It's on our phones. You know, the best kind of apps are using it all the time. But it's what questions do you want to ask? And that's kind of going to be part of everybody's job, really, or most many people's jobs anyway. And it's not so much the supplying the, I suppose you could think of it as supplying the intelligence in terms of, imagining what questions to ask. So to give an example, Google have this kind of offshoot called DeepMind, which has made a lot of progress in terms of improving the energy efficiency of Google's vast server farms. And that is effectively AI working out ways of optimizing energy consumption and minimizing energy consumption. And it's done so because a bunch of smart people who want to minimize energy consumption have asked it to do so, if you like. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of, that if you like is, I don't know if it's new jobs as such, but it's an important human role that needs to be played in order to maximize the benefits of AI,
Right.
And
what about the second question? What about the jobs that, for right now, according to your article, are safe from AI, the teachers, the security guards? Do you think those jobs will always be safe?
No. Well, knowing that I can't guarantee it, but I think there are two broad classes of jobs, including ones that we might see a lot more of. One is where people benefit from close connection with another human being, whether that's in a mentoring role or a caring role or a supporting role or whatever. So it might be a teacher or a health worker or yoga teacher, personal trainer, that kind of thing. And we know that people like interacting with other people and take comfort from other people and reassurance from other people and so on. And I think that will go on being the case. And you might even find there are actually more people in that sort of face-to-face human role rather than fewer. So people who are capable of using the power of AI to provide reassurance, comfort, et cetera, to people. The other thing, of course, is some people will be cheaper than computers, at least for quite a while. So having an intelligent human security guard who can spot all sorts of threats and interpret them and interpret behavior of people is probably going to be, you've already got a pretty sophisticated, non-artificial intelligence there in the form of that security guard sitting on his stool, smoking a cigarette and keeping an eye on, what's that bloke over there doing? Yeah. And he's probably going to work out cheaper than having an extraordinarily sophisticated array of bots and sensors. Though he will no doubt be using AI to some extent. People talk about this phrase cobots. I think I mentioned that in the article. There was a nice example I know I quoted there of software interpreting a MRI scan and a doctor interpreting an MRI scan, and both of them can do it quite well, but when you put them together, they do it better.
Right.
So people working closely with AI and learning how to use AI and so on, and indeed providing the teaching for AI to get better at what it does will be an important role as well.
I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you are on vacation. Is there anything else?
I've got about another 3 minutes, if that's okay.
So I'll just wrap up and ask, is there anything else you want to add?
I think we are right to be vigilant about the negative ways in which it can be used, but that mustn't blind us to the massive potential it has.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, Jerry. Thanks so much for your time. Good luck with it.
Thanks.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.